everyone. Welcome back to No Time for Neutral. I'm Georgie.
And I'm Andy.
And good Lord, if this isn't the best post-election day we've had in a minute, Andy. Last night was incredible.
Hell yeah, it feels good to be a Democrat today.
It sure does, because usually you hear blue waves and midterms and off years and things like that, but like this is an off year. Like, it's not a presidential year, and there aren't federal races this year. And at least in Montana, and I feel like in most races across the country, turnout was really good. And Dems won just about every single race, which that was, like, being watched last night.
Absolutely. People came out and made their voices heard, and they told the current administration that they are upset with what is going on.
No, right.
They're ready for change, and they're ready for democratic policies and liberal values, and they're over this current state of fascism.
Yeah, the dumpster fire that is our current federal government. But let's go through the list. Abigail Spanberger secured her win as governor of Virginia, and she's actually the first female governor of the state, which is cool. I always love when we hit milestones like that, because we kind of forget that women still aren't always in positions of power like that. So I like having those little reminders when things like that happen. But that race is pretty notable because Donald Trump did not endorse the Republican candidate by name. He had multiple rallies in Virginia. He campaigned in Virginia, but he never once came out and said, you should vote for Winsome Earle Sears.
And why was that? Did her campaign not want his name?
No, it wasn't that. I think this was a Trump decision. She was nuts, but not any, like, more nuts than the rest of them. Like, there was nothing about her that I was like, oh, that's why he didn't endorse her, or something like that. There was nothing that stuck out to me.
Yeah, and I think she kind of had a steep hill to climb herself because she was not that great of a candidate.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And her competition on the Democratic side was some solid competition.
Totally.
Maybe that's part of it.
Maybe. And then we had a very similar kind of race in New Jersey, where Mikey Sherrill will become the governor of New Jersey. And as for the way...
The second female.
Yeah, she's the second one in New Jersey. Good night for women, man.
Good one, Georgie.
Oh, my God. But so the campaign in New Jersey... is kind of inverted from what happened in Virginia. Trump campaigned really, really hard by name in specific for the guy running in New Jersey.
Yeah.
But Mikey Sherrill won by bigger margins. Which I think is kind of interesting to look at. Obviously, we don't have numbers to break down this far enough yet. But I think it's interesting that the Democratic candidate won with a bigger margin with a very loudly proclaimed Trump candidate versus the other race where it was closer. It was still a pretty big win, but it was closer when Trump did not endorse that candidate by name.
Yeah, that is interesting, huh?
So I'm starting to wonder if at some point having his name attached is no longer an added benefit.
Yeah.
We'll see.
People are waking up.
Hopefully. But in more good news, Prop 50 out of California, that passed basically the second polls closed last night. There was a really big break between when results started coming in from New Jersey and when polls closed in California. It was like a 2-hour gap.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is going to take forever. And then I kind of forgot in about the like countdown until it was like 9:01 on the dot. And it was like, Prop 50 has passed. And the reason they can call elections like that is because of exit polling. So there will be people who essentially stand outside of polling places and be like, hey, just curious, what was important to you? Who'd you vote for? Like, obviously you don't have to answer those questions, but lots of people do. So previous polling and then exit polling, it was just automatically called. It was an absolute blowout. I think it's good news for Gavin Newsom, who increasingly seems to be looking like he's wanting a run at the presidency in 28. And so I think that's his first real test was getting that passed. And he did. And so now Dems will have a likely 5-seat advantage. California will redraw to give Democrats a likely 5-seat advantage when it comes to House seats. And again, that's in an attempt to fight off. It was initially the Texas gerrymander, and now that's spread to a handful of Republican states. But good news there.
Yeah.
I'm glad nothing went south in California, because like there were DOJ observers and like there were people who were really, really worried about like voter suppression and ICE, and if Californians were gonna feel safe enough essentially to go to the polls, and whether or not that was true, they showed up anyway.
And I was nervous about Proposition 50 kind of from the get-go, just because if you're not paying attention every day to the news,
it sounds bad.
My fear was like voters may not know what it is, so just like may not vote for it. But they voted for this in spades. Like it passed with like 60%+ of the vote.
Totally.
So they messaged, they messaged the hell out of it, and they educated their voters about what this is. And it's basically, you know, the response to Governor Abbott in Texas redistricting because Daddy Trump told him to.
Right.
And so the Democrats in California are fighting fire with fire and bringing five or more Democrat seats to Congress next election.
So. Like, we brought out the woodwork for Prop 50. I saw a Prop 50 ad with just about every single Democrat politician you could imagine. There were ads with Obama. There were ads with the AOC. Like, everyone who had a platform within some community of the Democratic Party was involved in getting Prop 50 passed. And I think that says a lot about how important getting this through is if we want a shot at, you know, keeping democracy and peace and not having three jobs in 28, but you know. And then in the most popular race of the night, Zohra Mamdani will become the first Muslim mayor of New York City.
So exciting.
It is very, very exciting. And it looks like he actually might come out of this with a 50% majority, which practically he kind of needs, because he's got big plans and big dreams. And he's got to convince a lot of people to get on board with that. And if he can't say, hey, a majority of New York City voted for this, that's going to be an even tougher fight for him. But it's looking like he might, his last numbers I saw, he was sitting at about 50.4%. And for those of you who haven't seen his platform, he ran on pretty much three things: freezing the rent, free city buses, and locally run grocery stores in food deserts. That was essentially his whole platform. And I think it's a kind of an omen for where the electorate is. And I've been seeing this quote everywhere in the last couple of weeks, but like, it really is the economy, stupid. It is.
Yeah, it is. campaign was all about affordability, and like we all need to be able to afford to live, no matter if you're wealthy, no matter if you're poor, and the majority of us are not wealthy, and so we need to have affordable groceries, we need to have affordable childcare, and he ran on those basic principles. And I think what's so refreshing about it is like it's just like so simple and basic to understand. We all need these things, right?
Yeah.
And not only that, but he's young, he's a person of color, he's like totally new and refreshing to the scene of politics. You know, his he's charismatic, and his message just carried with so many people.
No, like, it really did.
New Yorkers clung to his message. And it just makes sense, right? Being able to afford to live. Mm-hmm. And on top of that is, like, he's running for the mayor of New York, which is by far and away the most expensive place in this country to live. And I don't know, I'm just, like, personally really excited about it, because less than 6 months ago, I was in New York City visiting my friend Christopher, and Christopher lives in Brooklyn, and he's lived there ever since we both graduated college here at the University of Montana, basically. Mm-hmm. And Christopher was telling me that he was recently at this political event where this new guy on the scene, who's mm-hmm. like was currently serving as like a commissioner, like one of their city councils of one of the boroughs, Zorhan Mamdani. And Christopher was telling him that he's like so cool, but his chances of winning were not that great. This mm-hmm. was before the primary. And he trounced the primary. Mm-hmm. And then he totally blew him away with the general election. So it's really fascinating.
I think the key to Zoran's campaign is, like, a lot of people are saying that, like, he won because he was good at social media. Like, oh, he was good at the internet. So he reached all the young people, and that's why he won. But that's not really how it went down. Like, yes, don't get me wrong, as the social media girl, he ran an absolutely flawless social media campaign. His digital team is incredible, but that's not why they won. They won because they took that messaging, put it online, and figured out how to get people looking away from their screens and talking to people. The Mamdani campaign knocked 3 million doors.
That's so many doors.
In New York City.
That's like 3 Montanas.
Yeah, yeah. Literally all of Montana 3 times. And I've seen videos show up on my social media of people who are my age. And they're like, hee, 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 I'm out canvassing for Zoran. Like, engaging in local government is fun. So it's not so much that he was good at the internet. He was able to use the internet to connect people to their own community.
Right. Well, and also it's like, you know, it's the sore losers that say shit like that. Like, of course he was good at social media. He won his election. That was part of it. And we live in 2025.
And so he's 34 years old. Like,
yeah, if you're not using social media with your political campaign, sorry to tell you, you know, like,
yeah, no,
that's a dumb thing to say. And also, like, something that I think we as Democrats can take a page from is, not only did he target Democrats, progressive people, liberals, but he also targeted non-traditional voters, like mm-hmm. people that don't typically vote, and he gave them a reason to vote for him, and new voters. So, like, non-typical voters mm-hmm. and young voters on top of the regular base.
Right. Like, we talk about, like, oh, well, we have our base voters, and then we have swing voters, and then we have opposition voters, and, like, this is who, like, our targets are, when a good portion of the electorate doesn't even vote. They don't even show up. And that is who... Like, we should stop moderating our messaging based on who might flip and who might not and who might be persuasive, and just figure out how to get people up and out of the house and, like, back in their communities.
Yeah.
But I will not keep rambling on about national races forever. And so I do have a little bit of an elections junk drawer and some random little stats from the last 24 hours. Pennsylvania retained 3 Supreme Court judges, and to keep their liberal balance there, they weren't confident that they were going to retain all 3. They knew they were going to keep most, but all of them was a maybe. And they ended up keeping all 3, so that's great.
Yeah, pretty important to the balance of Pennsylvania's judiciary. And, like, The difference between Pennsylvania and Montana is, like, their judiciary is, you know, mm-hmm. partisan. Ours is not. And
so it's weird. Yeah. It's weird to be like, oh, they have a Democrat Supreme Court, because we're not used to that. But
yeah,
that's how it
and
works
even
there.
Though Republicans in our state are trying to make it partisan.
Yeah.
In Montana, which we do not want, because why would we want partisan influence on the judicial system? It's like the opposite of what the judicial system is there for, but I guess that's my own opinion.
J.D. Vance's brother also made an appearance yesterday. He ran for mayor of Cincinnati, and he absolutely got his ass handed to him on a silver platter, and it made me laugh really hard.
I love that. I didn't even know he was running for office until I saw the headline.
Me either.
J.D. Vance's brother loses mayoral race for Cincinnati. Like, oh, I love that I just learned this after he lost.
Mm-hmm. And then the, like, second sentence is, like, the vice president endorsed him in a... And I'm like, yikes. Like, the vice president is your brother. You get an endorsement from him. And you still can't win? Rough, brother. This one is probably my favorite news out of Election Day this year. Democrats broke the supermajority in the Mississippi State Senate. And that's not a win you would like see a headline about. That's not a win that you really think about. But those are the little wins before the big wins. You don't just go from all red to all blue overnight. It's little things like this.
And for Mississippi, that's huge.
Yeah.
We, as Montanans, can actually relate very well, because in not the most recent recent legislative session, but the one before, 2 years before that, we were experiencing a supermajority of Republicans.
And it was bad.
It was bad. They were able to ramrod through a lot of really awful legislation because they had the power to.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that power back this last election by electing 10 additional Democrats to the House and 2 to the Senate, putting us no longer in a Republican supermajority. But, mm-hmm. like, we can relate. Well done, Mississippi.
Snaps for Mississippi over here. And then my last one is... Two Democrats won PSC seats, the Utility Service Commission. They won two PSC seats in Georgia. And those are the first not federal statewide offices that a Democrat's held in almost 20 years in Georgia. So I think that's exciting too. I'm trying not to get my hopes up too high. Been burned quite a few times by an election like this one, but... I think this is a really good indicator of I would say this is a pretty loud rejection of Trump's agenda thus far, anyway.
100%.
I don't know how, and there's something, Speaker Johnson said that the elections weren't a reflection on Republicans at all. But even Trump was like, yeah, the elections were not good for Republicans. Not good. They weren't good.
Trump just says it.
They weren't good.
Wow. Yeah. Speaker Johnson.
And so, like, if even Trump, of all people, con man, like, 101, even if he can say it's bad, really?
Yeah.
But there were also elections in Montana last night, and Montana's local elections are all nonpartisan, so it makes it really tricky to... comment for us to comment, because it's not really a partisan space, and that's how it should be, because it shouldn't be essentially like a mini Congress for Helena, for Billings. It should just be people trying to make the community a better place. But that being said, there's lots of new faces in Montana politics. Mm-hmm. We got quite a few new mayors, quite a few new city council folk across Montana this morning.
Lots of good new faces, let's just say that.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
I'm here in Missoula, and I'm pretty damn happy with who got elected. Mayor Andrea Davis
mm-hmm.
won her re-election with 68% of the vote.
And ooh.
I personally think she's doing a great job, so I'm very excited for Andrea.
That's awesome. Speaking of Missoula, we mentioned this last week, so I wanted to follow up for everybody. We mentioned last week that there were 4 DSA-endorsed candidates in Missoula races for city council. Yeah, so 3 out of 4 DSA candidates for Missoula City Council, they lost their races to their more moderate opponent. I'd be really curious to know why or what the difference is. for voters. Obviously, like, you can look at, like, policy differences and things like that, but I'd be curious to know, like, in a voter's head, what the deciding factor is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Missoula's interesting because we actually had, you know, more liberal people running against liberal people, because mm-hmm. Missoula tends to be more of a liberal place compared to the rest of Montana, and yeah, we have some interesting races.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, like, you know, in order for us to exist and win as Democrats is, like, we truly need to embody the big tent.
Totally.
So I think can't, like, to your kind of question, candidate quality really has a big piece of that.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree.
When voting between two Democrats, basically, or two liberals. And then I think voters probably go into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
Like, what is the Democratic Socialist talking about that the more moderate Democrat-leaning person is not?
Sure. You know?
Like, what is this candidate speaking towards that's going to affect my day-to-day
mm-hmm.
more than the other?
I'm sure part of it is also subconscious too. They're too old, they're too young, they're a man, they're a woman. Like, if you have, like, those subconscious biases, like, and that's not, like, inherently a bad thing, but, like, I'm sure that is something that shows up when it comes to who people cast their vote for.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last take for Montana elections, it was a really bad night for levies. There were a handful of levies across the state, and pretty much everyone I saw went down. These are...
And I think, like, it's due to the times we're living in. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we talked about affordability.
Totally.
That's kind of like what we're getting back from this. People are struggling to afford...
Totally.
...day to day. And even the Democrats voted down levies, and traditionally, like, Democrats are voting for levies.
Right, especially, like, we're talking school and infrastructure levies. Like, we're talking, there was a levy in Columbia Falls to build a new elementary school, it was Belgrade. Belgrade, they needed to build a new elementary school, and then Columbia Falls, they had to do a whole bunch of renovation work. Like, these are pretty important things. But also, like you said, everything is insanely expensive, and these are things that it's the government's responsibility to fund. It's the whole point of paying taxes, right? Yeah. Supposed to fund the schools and the roads.
Yeah, that's why people need to vote for the state legislature when those races come about, because a lot of these local things that are on our local ballots regarding levies, like school infrastructure, mm-hmm. for example, or roads and bridges, those are things that, like, the state government could help assist through our taxpayer dollars, but the Republicans have different ideas,
right,
on where they want state funding to go.
Well, and Gianforte has cut the top income tax rate twice.
Yeah.
So, like, our tax rate for the wealthiest Montanans, Gianforte has made them pay less taxes twice while he's been in office. And so at some point, we are going to have to stop asking more of our middle-class neighbors to fund their own services that they're already paying for, and start asking more of the millionaires and billionaires who live here.
Exactly.
The earth keeps turning, Andy, because the sun has risen another day, and the Trump administration is still here. But today, him and his Republican trifecta have broken their own record for the longest government shutdown in history. Yay!
Crazy. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah. The initial record was also set by Donald Trump in a Republican trifecta in 2018. That one lasted 35 days. Today is 36 days and counting, as of when we're recording this. And we'll see. I've seen a couple of more moderate Democrats say that they're more willing to, like, talk about reopening the government, and I don't understand how they plan on doing that if Republicans are still refusing to negotiate, but I guess that's something for them to figure out. But from the way I see it, National Democrats just got the most resounding, like, answer to the shutdown.
Yeah.
You don't win elections like that if people are mad at you.
Exactly. They need to listen to the voters. And the voters are saying, we don't want to lose our health care,
mm-hmm.
which is what Democrats are fighting to negotiate in order to reopen the government. That is the Democrats' one sticking point, is they don't want people who are using the services of the Affordable Health Care Plan,
mm-hmm.
Obamacare, to go away.
Yeah.
People need their health care, and that is the hill that Democrats are currently willing to die on.
Yeah.
And what's awful is, like, it's been over a month, government's still shut down, longest shutdown in U.S. history. It's awful. Democrats are blaming Republicans, Republicans are blaming Democrats. Like, we're all at fault here, but let's be realistic. Republicans have majorities in the House, in the Senate, and Trump is the president. This is a Republican shutdown. Democrats are holding their feet to the fire to save people's healthcare.
Yeah, precisely. Slay. I don't even know how to follow that up. But yeah, Andy, you're absolutely right. The shutdown is becoming more and more of an issue, I would say. The transportation secretary floated the idea of closing U.S. airspace soon, because we don't have enough air traffic controllers, because air traffic controllers still aren't getting paid. I saw a video of the TSA line at Denver International, and it literally looked like a mosh pit. The line was so insane. Like, if anyone is planning on flying anywhere, over specifically Thanksgiving or sooner, maybe you move your flight a day in advance, just in case, or get travel insurance or something. Because
holidays coming up and people needing to travel, oh, I can see a lot of pissed off.
Yeah,
travelers.
I would not want to be in an airport.
Yeah.
So expect delays is what I'm saying. And then to close us out, over the weekend, a federal judge ruled that Donald Trump and the federal government do have to release the funding they have for SNAP. We were talking about this last week. The federal government has a contingency fund to keep benefits running in the event of, you know, this. And the Trump administration said, yeah, no, we're not going to use that money. Federal court said, yeah, you are. You are going to use that money. And so in response, Trump was like, okay, fine, we're only going to pay half the benefits for the month. And then about 4 hours after he said that, he was like, actually, no, I'm not paying it. I said that initially. You told me to, but I'm not gonna. So apparently making America great again equals letting Americans starve. Preventably? I don't know. And also,
put this into perspective, with the loss of these SNAP benefits, here in Montana, 77,000 people are going to go hungry.
Mm-hmm.
77,000 people. That's nearly 10% of the population. And in other states, there's even higher percentages of people that are on SNAP.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Nationwide, here, I think it's 44 million
people. I've seen between 42 and 44 million. And then here in Montana, that 77,000 number, out of that, like 30,000 are kids. So I'm not sure what they're expecting literal children to do to feed themselves, because it's not like they have, you know, jobs or money or anything like that. Yeah, I don't know. But what I do know is that Gianforte is also doing the same thing. State of Montana has the money. We could be paying out benefits to Montana SNAP recipients right now. but we're not, because Governor Gianforte is refusing to use it because he's worried that the federal government's not going to pay us back. That's his whole reasoning.
Yeah. The Montana legislature created this emergency pocket of funding for emergencies just like this to fund programs just like this in times like this, and the governor is refusing to feed Montanans, including children.
The cruelty is the point.
Children starve in our state.
The cruelty is the point.
Yeah.
Like, they are letting people starve to prove a political point. That's it.
Yeah. So there is something you can do, something we can do. Our central committees across the state of Montana are all doing food drives. Thank you so much for all those folks on the ground helping with this effort. You can either reach out to your local central committee, donate food, or donate money directly to food banks in your area. I know straight up cash donations go a very long way in helping them continue their services and feed the people in those local areas. So your local food banks are going to need all the help they can get right now.
Totally. And most food banks are really trying to stock up in advance of the holidays. So green beans, cranberries, potatoes, gravy, spices, that's something that's not very commonly donated to food pantries, and having some salt and pepper on Thanksgiving would probably be really special to some folks. So think about things like that as well this month, because if the government's not going to show up for our neighbors, we've all got to show up for our neighbors. Superman's not coming to save us, y'all.
Up to us, we the people.
Yay. But Andy, how have you been? Tell me about your weekend.
Oh, life's pretty good. What did we do? I'm still on a high after last night's election. We needed that boost and we got it. And this momentum is going to continue. So people, keep that energy going.
I love it. It was so nice to be on the internet and not have it be like miserable.
Yeah,
just for a little bit.
Yeah, we're not alone. The majority of this country feels like this country is going in the wrong direction, and so we're gonna turn it around.
Oh yeah,
with everybody's help. So
I like it.
But yeah, what did I do this weekend? I'm trying to remember. So my partner loves animals, right? Mm-hmm. We have a farm in Drummond, and he belongs to a local rabbit club, and he put on a rabbit show in Helena.
Aww.
I'd never been to one, but it was, frankly, one of the most adorable things. Hanging out at the Lewis and Clark County Fairgrounds, surrounded by 300 rabbits, and it was also over Halloween weekend. Part of my job was to judge the costume contest. So they actually dressed up these little rabbits in Halloween costumes.
Oh my God.
I'll send you pictures.
Oh my God. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, it was great. So that happened. Yeah. Oh, and then also I just want to talk about, so, you know, I watched The View, right? I'm obsessed with
Jesse
and my Joy Behar. Anyway, Marjorie Taylor Greene was their guest yesterday.
I saw this and thought immediately of you.
In the world that would come and sit at The View's table, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And this is just so fascinating to me because, one, she's not authentic, and I truly don't believe half the shit that comes out of her mouth because, like, you know, and not so recent of past, she's been doing some, like, crazy-ass shit. And, you know, she's like a very far right Republican Freedom Caucus individual type.
Right.
So she has had some like change of heart decisions these last few weeks. Like she's, you know, advocating to fund healthcare in her district. Great. About time, Marjorie. She's one of the few Republicans that are advocating to release the Epstein files.
That's yeah, right. We haven't been talking about that one enough.
Yeah. So anyway, they were having a very interesting interview with her at the table.
Okay.
It stayed very civil. I'm glad like the studio didn't burst into flames because of this unprecedented moment that was happening. But yeah, I found it so interesting. Oh, and the night before, I actually listened to an hour worth of AOC talking about, you know, election night coming up. And she actually spilled some tea about Marjorie Taylor Greene, that the reason, and this is coming from AOC, but, you know, like, I believe AOC or whatever Marjorie said. So AOC was saying that Marjorie is, like, having this change of heart moment because she had it, like, intentions of running for the Senate in Florida. And Daddy Trump was like, no, you don't. I'm not going to let you. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is pissed off at Trump.
That makes sense.
She also hates Mike Johnson and has been vocally saying, like, current Republican leadership, specifically men, are at fault here. So it's wild. It's fascinating. I'm here for it.
We live in such a weird time.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, that sounds like fun. The rabbit show, not the Marjorie Taylor Greene, whatever's happening there. But I moved in the middle of October, and so I finally got to, you know, go to, like, the grocery store and buy, like, actual groceries instead of, like, frozen pizza and random things. And then I had the coziest Sunday I've had in a really long time. I hate the time change. I'm not a time change girl. And so I've been trying to find my new fall winter routines now that, like, the light is changing. And so I cleaned my whole house Sunday. I sat on the couch and played the Harry Potter Xbox game. Hogwarts Legacy came out, like, 2 years ago. It's very, like, fall vibes because it's Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And then, like, I have these big windows. It was so perfect. And then I made a new soup. So not as cool or as public as a rabbit show. But it was a nice little recharge moment that I think I needed before this week. But speaking of recharge moments, I hope everyone has one of their own over the weekend. Take the win, but don't take it too far. There's still a lot of work for us to do between now and 2026, and we're gonna need your help every step of the way.
Totally. Like I mentioned earlier, keep up the momentum. Mm-hmm. Like, it was really exciting what happened in the United States of America last night, and there's a whole lot left to do. So if you want to get more involved, join a local Democratic Central Committee, or, you know, there's all sorts of other great advocacy groups doing work on the ground all over Montana. So find what you're interested in, find what you're passionate about, and
show up.
Showing up is 90%. How does that go? Showing up is 90% of
the battle?
Anyway.
Something like that. Anyway. We'll see you next week.